Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam in the Morning podcast, brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers, where I get my wild country tires. Les Schwab, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Man, those two really hate each other. That feud's like Biggie Tupac level. Maybe even Morgan Freeman, Shailene Woodley level.
With Dusty Hera.
I'm not hygienic. I don't wipe properly. I lack style.
And the man who accepted impermissible teriyaki benefits as a college All-American, Cam Cleland.
Why does anybody in the world ever eat anything but breakfast food?
People are idiots, Ron.
Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
Pac-12 done in the college football playoff. 55305, Bridgeport Beers text line. Damning blow for the Pac-12 this weekend. We said it was a huge weekend for USC as they went to Notre Dame. And boy, did they just look doomed from the get-go in that one. I mean,
they got beat out of the bus.
Darnold fumbles the opening snap, and then it just kind of just went after that. 49-14, Notre Dame, who, telling you,
how good is Notre Dame?
They can win their final four games.
How are they going to do that?
That started with USC, and if they do, that team is in the playoff, which means there will be two Power Five conferences on the outside looking in.
I don't know if they're could you feel 100% they're in if they win out?
If they beat North 100%. Carolina, if they beat number 14 North Carolina State, they beat number 8 Miami, and they beat number 20 Stanford. Who number 20 Stanford could be the representative in the Pac-12 North for the Pac-12 championship.
So what you're saying is, if Notre Dame wins out, the ACC's out.
Yeah,
the ACC's
because
out.
Miami,
the Pac-12
Miami
is out.
Miami would have a loss in there as well.
Where's Clemson?
Yeah, Clemson could. Their one loss could doom them against Syracuse.
So you mean to tell me?
Yes,
we go
I
in,
do.
I know. I put this scenario in play, which I love this because we're talking about it now, and that's what makes it the fun of the college football playoff. So we're going to do it anyway, even though it probably won't come true. The ACC could be out.
Yes.
So Notre Dame's in. Mm-hmm. Georgia and Alabama are in the SEC championship game. Georgia loses to Alabama by a field goal. They're both in.
I asked Joel Klatt about this last week.
I know it. And then take the Big Ten.
Yeah.
UC Penn State beat Ohio State, and they go on and play Wisconsin, two undefeated teams face off in the Big Ten championship. You mean to tell me they're not going to take a Big Ten team in? Certainly they're in. So it's Penn State, and it's Notre Dame, and two SEC teams, and here we go. College football chaos. Do you love it?
Well, the only monkey wrench that could be thrown into that would be if TCU goes undefeated. If TCU goes unbeaten, they're in.
Undefeated. TCU.
Why don't you think that?
I don't think they're going undefeated. I think they lose a game. No, I think they lose a game. They're good. I don't think they'd go undefeated. Yes. I don't think an undefeated comes out of. I think both the Pac-12 and the Big 12 and the ACC are all out.
So you're saying three of the Power Five conferences
all out.
Will be out.
I'm just going. Wouldn't that be perfect for? I want chaos, Dusty. That's what I want. I want I want fan bases across the country.
It would
so
be,
irate.
It would be very hard to keep Georgia out. If they lose a tight one to Alabama and Notre Dame finishes the season unbeaten, because they would have Notre Dame would their only loss would be to Georgia by 1 point at home. So Georgia got a road win.
Yeah.
And if they lose to what is perceived to be the best team in the country in Alabama in the SEC championship game in a tight one, good luck trying to justify that team being at home. Well,
this
and
is
Notre
what's,
Dame being
this
in.
Is why college football's so crazy right now, because you could have three conferences that are in the Power Five out of it and have an independent sitting there by themselves going tee-hee-hee-hee-hee as Notre Dame looks and goes, we're not in a conference, but we'll get in anyway because we've overscheduled everything and we deserve it. And how are you going to say against it? Because now college football is more about the eye test than it is about your actually playing football games.
Well, with Notre Dame is doing the tee-hee-hee we're in. there, as it stands right now, they will have wins on their schedule if they went out over six ranked opponents.
And I can't argue that they don't deserve to be in because I would say they deserve it.
Georgia.
I couldn't argue against it.
Georgia, Michigan State, USC, North Carolina State, Miami, and Stanford. They would have wins over six ranked opponents this year if they went out and finished this thing off. So, yeah, I could totally see them going to the playoff, and that would mean Notre Dame would never have to join a conference ever.
Huh.
Ever. I think Notre Dame should be in a conference. I think they should force them into a conference and say, if you want to, you can't be an independent.
I don't think you
just
should be allowed to have
a full-fledged member of the ACC and get it over with.
I say that versus BYU. BYU is a dead program now. They're dead.
And it is amazing that Notre Dame has been able to keep it up. Mm-hmm. And while we see BYU get to the lows of the lows. Now, Notre Dame also started this race way ahead of BYU.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they far more prestige, far more winning, far more enticing and intriguing program to go to. But BYU, to see the level that they've dropped off to is quite astonishing because that offense sucks.
Here's a text. It says, it's not the Pac-12 team can't make the playoff, as they don't deserve it. Any of the teams in the Pac-12 would get killed by the other three. Well, I don't know. I can't say that because I don't know. But
I'm not sure if I believe that because what, the Big Ten hasn't scored in the college football playoffs since
you have
Ohio
a stat
State?
About how well the Pac-12 has played in their non-conference.
I went and I looked this up
and
last
their Power
night.
Five. So share that with us.
The Pac-12 has the best record in non-conference games against Power Five opponents this year. The Pac-12 is currently 6-3 in non-conference games against Power 5 opponents, and that includes their loss to Notre Dame. The Big Ten is just 7-6. The SEC is 5-6. The ACC is 5-8. The Big 12 is 4-6 against Power 5 opponents.
That's a very good stat. So with that...
And the losses for the Pac-12 are Notre Dame, USC, Texas Tech, Arizona State, and then Oregon State, Minnesota.
What that stat goes to show you is that the eye test of the top end of a conference is always how you're judged.
Yes.
Not how your overall body of work is. When we sit here and I say that too, is that the Pac-12 does not do a good job of setting its top end teams up for success. It does not. Mm-hmm. Because you're only viewed on how good your top end of your conference is and how well you can maintain that. And it now feeds down to your entire conference. If one team looks strong, the entire conference will handle it.
The big problem that the Pac-12 has right now is that the middle of the pack is too good. And I think that's what this number shows. These are non-conference numbers. The middle of the pack is too good. And there isn't anybody head and shoulders above cream rising to the top.
And I love
Washington
that,
was that last year. USC and Oregon have been that. Stanford has been that in years past. Mm-hmm. There really isn't that team that you sit there and you go, that team, head and shoulders above everybody, that is a great football team.
I will argue this till I'm taking the dirt nap. I think if you show that you can win your conference, no matter how strong or how weak and how average it can be, you deserve the opportunity to play in a playoff scenario up against the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
If that is not a measure of talent in your team or your conference, then what is it?
You know,
what are we doing in college football?
That's the thing that sucks. Is that
it does. It's disappointing.
It's not. I mean, look no further than, you know, the SEC is the power of college football. The ACC is also considered that power of college football. Mm-hmm. They are combined 10-14 against other Power 5 schools.
And this one says the Pac-12 is deeper with teams. Excuse me. This text, 4-11 in most years. That said, the majority of the league plays, you know, half stadiums, beautiful weather. I argue that it's easier to go through this league undefeated than others. I'm going to keep saying this, is that, hey, you know what, West Coast, no problem. Let's lean on the fact we got other things to do. We don't want to pay for high tickets. We don't like night games. And we don't like going on the road.
See,
let's take that stance in this conference forever. Because that will be the downfall of every opportunity you will get from this conference. You'll show up once every 5 years. But if you want to be in it every year, do you need to change the mentality of a coast? Or just the mentality of a conference as a whole at the leadership position?
Just a couple fan bases is really what you need. I mean, and that's my honest opinion, is that Because look at what happens. What has happened up in Seattle that UW has gotten good? What did you see with the fan base at Oregon? I mean, yeah, everybody's like, oh, half empty stadiums, yada yada yada. No, when you're good, you get a spark. There's no better atmosphere than the Coliseum when they are sold out night game. That place is rocking, and you got like the Texas game this year is a great example of that. I mean, or was anybody saying that about the Pac-12 when USC was playing as sold out Texas?
Did you see the size of the people that went to the Rose Bowl? Tennessee is hot garbage. In fact, their coach is a dead man walking.
Yes, he is.
100,000 people there.
Yeah, Bruce or Butch.
100,000 people.
Butch.
Michigan will be a 500 team, maybe a little bit more than a 500. They're now dropping out. They lose. Yeah. 110,000 people will be there. So you tell me. I mean, I'm trying to figure this out personally. I don't think it ever changes. I don't think there's enough. Mental demand for the desire for football
out
here.
You also have to remember, though, out west, a lot of these schools' fan bases aren't that old. When you think of it this way, I mean, have new age Duck fan who's coming, but look at the population of the state of Oregon, just the boom in the last 20 years. You know, there hasn't been that connection in Tennessee, Alabama. I mean, those people have been living there, dying, breathing. Like the West Coast used to be, you come to college out here, then you go back home.
I know. I don't mind that excuse, and I don't disagree with that excuse, but I still say it's one thing.
I think in time,
it's an excuse.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Because these are the same person that says, we have other things to do, like going snow skiing and going to the beach. We don't want to go to a game in the middle of Saturday. That same person is the same person that sends a text into the show and says, the Pac-12's deeper, and we deserve an opportunity. And when they're good, what's going on? That's the same person, because it's a fly by night, out of sight, out of mind mentality. That's not the way others in the country treat football, especially in the South and the East Coast. And right now, they're winning because their leverage is that we care more.
Yeah,
that's their leverage.
And they do have that. And you know what? When it comes to the college football playoff, a lot of it is how well does your team travel? Can they sell out the stadiums?
Bowl games? You want to travel?
Will they watch it on TV?
Yeah.
That has a lot to do with it there. But, I mean, I think that is going to be an uphill fight out west forever.
I agree with you.
And it is what it is. I agree. You just need to have dominant teams, and those dominant teams will.
I agree.
They'll travel. They'll win.
It's a little frustrating.
The Pac-12 hasn't had that dominant team. But as a whole, the Pac-12 won't have the respect from top to bottom.
It's not going to stop me from loving this conference and loving every team and supporting it to the core. But it's just. It's, you know, you're playing with one arm tied behind your back.
Was a sideline fight what really changed the fate of the Seahawks Giants? Dusty and Cam on the Fan.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
Did Doug Baldwin fighting Tom Cable spark the Seahawks to a victory yesterday?
Here's one thing I would never do. I've gotten really mad at coaches before. Uh-huh. I've never, ever put my hands on a coach.
Well, yeah.
Would you ever have done that?
No.
Even at the highest level?
No. Well, I don't know what it's like
when
to be
an NFL
player,
somebody
but
coach,
I wouldn't have.
I don't care if I hate him. More than anything.
Yeah.
I just can't personally think I would ever put hands on a coach.
There have been some coaches that I've wanted to, but you never do.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. You never do. Doug Baldwin put hands on Tom Cable on the sideline during yesterday's game. Now, I think it's maybe a little bit overblown because he kind of just like, it was like one-handed and it was like a listen type deal. But
it was a listen, get off me is what it was.
But even that, it was like, holy smokes. Doug Baldwin apparently fired up because the offensive line was playing like hot garbage in the first half and Russell Wilson was getting killed.
Yeah.
Which he's right.
Yeah.
And Tom Cable, offensive line coach, didn't like it.
He's going to defend his guys.
Yeah. Which is
I would too.
To be expected. But you saw Pete Carroll was just sitting there kind of looking back and forth. That's my favorite part is Pete Carroll's head is like swiveling back and forth going like, yeah, all right. And then Russell Wilson's sitting right there too. Nobody really like jumped in because there wasn't that imminent, this is going to turn into a fight. But that is kind of the turning point of the game, though, and the offensive line actually started playing better after that.
Yeah.
It was surprising to me, but that may have been the galvanizing point of that game yesterday.
I'm not surprised with it, too, because the Seahawks are a very emotional team. Very emotional. They're built on momentum, too, but when you talk about from the top end, from Pete Carroll, you always reflect who you are. Pete Carroll is up and down. He's good. He's gone. That's Coach Carroll. I like that about him. Okay, but that's what I'm going to expect from a Seahawks team. So sometimes we saw last year Richard Sherman lose it on the sideline, right? And then he's super emotional. Everybody's emotional on defense. Michael Bennett is he is extremely emotional. Russell Wilson's the only stable factor I would call on the offense. Everybody else, from Doug Baldwin, all those other guys, they're just following
Jimmy Graham.
What is Jimmy Graham? He's a stoic, you know, he'll catch a ball. He'll act like he just caught a touchdown in the Super Bowl for a first down. Then he'll drop something. He's an emotional roller coaster with how he plays. It's a reflection of the team. If that's what it takes to get the Seahawks going, fine, man. Just do it.
Jimmy Graham is Pete Carroll's best job that he does is as a psychiatrist.
Yeah. Well, you are. You're managing, 53 egos. Everybody's different.
But Jimmy Graham's a little different, man.
Jimmy Graham, do you those guys two know drops his history of how he half? Grew up?
Well, yeah, I do. I've seen all the videos and all the stories that have been done on him.
It's a great story for him, but yeah, he's
hard life. What I do look at is I sit there and I go, the ups and downs he has is on the field. Like Pete Carroll talked about after he had dropped a touchdown, dropped probably what could have been a touchdown too in the first half.
We hit him in the stomach.
So two of them. He had to talk to Jimmy Graham and keep his head engaged and keep him in the game. Like you'll see, usually professional coaches, high level college coaches, get your S together and let's go.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll is doing the, hey, you're going to be okay. We're still going to go back to you.
And Russell Wilson did that too. He threw him a seam ball that was a tough catch. Got him some confidence, and then threw him another. When they needed him, they threw another touch. They threw a touchdown to him. So I looked at it and I went, "All right, that's also Russell Wilson making the decision. I'm not going to tank it on you. I'm still going to come right back. We need you to make a few plays."
Yeah.
And Doug Baldwin, angry Doug, call it what you want. The guy's good. Mm-hmm. He's probably got the best first step in the NFL right now. Now he's not elite speed, but his ability to make guys off the ball, you chuckled because that is like make guys off the ball.
No, I'm chuckling at what's happening on ESPN right now.
And I was laughing at myself. I was like, did I just say something a little bit? But his ability to get off the ball within a 10-yard radius, he's as good as anybody in the NFL. Across the board. Anybody. In a 10-yard window. He's not outrunning anybody.
I like Julio.
No. You're missing my point. Julio Jones is elite big, explosive wide receiver that can cover the entire field.
I know, but when he gets off the ball in that 10 yards, he's a monster.
Yeah. I'm saying is that Doug Baldwin is as good as anybody, if not the best, at being able to have a release or make guys miss off the ball in a 10-yard window. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. And then he's angry. That's what makes Doug so good, because of his anger and how he plays football.
This is
he played soft, it wouldn't be the same guy.
Yeah. Yeah. They have found their offense. Whatever happened in the second half.
Just hope he doesn't get punched by Coach Cable, because he's kind of been known to do that.
I don't think Tom Cable would get fired for that. No. It's just part of the culture they got there. Guy who might get fired is Steve Sarkisian. How bad was that offense in New England last night?
And
the Atlanta Falcons didn't score until the fourth quarter, where Julio Jones, Matt Ryan underthrew a ball. Malcolm Butler's like, yay, got an interception. And Julio Jones went, no, daddy wants that ball.
My football.
And
that was like watching a sixth grader go up against a second grader in PE.
That's really what it was. Mm-hmm. But Sark is now squarely on the hot seat as the offensive coordinator for the Falcons, because
what would you expect?
They went from being one of the most dominant offenses in football last year to one that's mustered 7 points this week, 17
in
the previous 2 weeks.
So wait a minute.
What?
So it's the same offense, went to the Super Bowl, same personnel, essentially, great quarterback, great wide receivers. Yeah. What's different?
Sark.
No, coaching.
Go Cubbies! Oh, get ready!
Right next to it.
Right on, baby! Let's go!
Yeah, coaching.
Dan Quinn doesn't handle the offense
coaching
in Atlanta.
And coaching some more. I don't, I don't wish failure on anybody, but I'm not surprised that Sark is struggling.
Like you do with
No, Sark. I don't wish him to complete that's because that's bad juju. Yep. I don't do that.
So his targets are Julio Jones, Austin Hooper, Levine Tuilolo, Mohamed Sanu, Derek Coleman is a fullback, and then Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman are your two running backs.
Yeah, it's a lack of innovation. It's not being able to understand the system, and it goes to show you how good Kyle Shanahan really was and what he was able to do with that team.
Kyle Shanahan keeping games close until yesterday in San Francisco has been an astonishment in its own right.
Yeah.
What he did with that offense last year, and they did like a statistical breakdown of it, and it looks like everybody's like, it's not personnel or play type that is what's hurting them, because they went to situational football, you know, whether it was one back, one tight end, two backs, one tight end, two and two, mm-hmm. or shotgun and under center.
So versatile.
If you look at it, it's very similar this year and last year. It's just the actual play call is different. The tendencies are remarkably similar.
It is similar, but Steve Sarkisian has never had that kind of style built into how he calls offense. He doesn't. Kyle Shanahan and him might as well be the difference between just two separate languages. You could have the same call. I can make it the same, yeah. Not only from formation to shifts and motions, but how he makes the calls at the times, it's not even similar.
I wonder when...
You could see Matt Ryan. He doesn't even look comfortable.
Yeah. I'm wondering when Matt Ryan just shakes off one of the calls and goes, no, we're not doing it.
Like I would fly bet sweep if Matt Ryan just called plays, they'd be better.
Like the fly sweep on fourth down. You could see Matt Ryan. I was like, oh.
You know what's fun, though, is that I've been in the huddle when we got in the huddle and a couple calls come in and we all look at each other and go, nope.
Well, check out of it. I didn't see it was there.
No.
I had to check you out.
You just go, nope, we're not doing that.
Gosh. They got routed last night, though. And Sark is now maybe fired by the end of the year.
No, he's not going
to. He's going to. Well, I think he will be.
And by the end of the year?
I think he will end up with Lane Kiffin at Florida Atlantic and the old Owls there of Florida Atlantic who.
They share a Tinder account when they get there?
Yeah, they'll share more than a Tinder account, buddy.
Oh boy, these are some bros.
They are 3-1 in conference, or 3-0 in conference play, 4-3 overall. They've got a big showdown coming up. Do the Owls with Western Kentucky? Lane Kiffin is actually winning at Florida Atlantic.
No surprise.
Really? That's not a surprise to you? In that video that Crawford just played a drop from.
What an exciting time.
He looked like a hostage. It's a little surprising. He was all sweaty and gross looking. His Twitter account is very bizarre.
He's a head coach now. He's got a lot of responsibility.
It's surprising to me Lane Kiffin's winning there. He has basically the entire team from Last Chance U, the Netflix series, is basically his starting offense. Like Lane Kiffin, it's bizarro world, but... Whatever, man. He and Sark reunited, it would feel so good. World Series set. Game one tomorrow. This thing is not just going to be a burner on the field, but it quite literally is going to be scorching hot in L.A. Here's Crotchy with SportsCenter.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
The World Series is set. Game one tomorrow. Houston Astros, AL champs, against the Los Angeles Dodgers, the NL champs. First time since 1970 that we will have a pair of 100-win teams in the World Series.
Woo. You know what, Dusty? I feel comfortable. These are the best teams in baseball that are playing. Do you like that? No, but honestly, Dynamite think about this. Let's go back. Let's go back to the All-Star break. And you went into this, and from the start,
yeah.
I knew that the Astros were good. Mm-hmm. But the Verlander trade,
yes.
That guy is frighteningly good. Not only, what is he in the playoffs?
Saves the
he's
season,
unhittable.
Man. Saved the
so
season.
So he's everything. That trade, whatever it was, and I think, was I hearing that it was down to the last 2 seconds
to get him? He got his portion of the trade deal where he waived his no trade clause, he got it back to Houston with 2 seconds mm-hmm. to spare. 2 seconds away from this.
So you're 2 seconds from not being in the World Series. What do you say to that? What do you say to that little...
Thank you to modern technology. Remember, who is it? Elvis Dumervil? Remember yeah. Elvis Dumervil when he tried to re-sign with the Ravens? And he couldn't get to a Kinko's in time to fax his...
I do remember this.
to fax his yeah. papers in. So he ended up missing his window and having to sign with the Broncos. And oh, wait. No, it was Broncos to Ravens. Yeah, I flipped those back. He couldn't get to the Kinko's to fax it to the Broncos and had to go to the Ravens.
Is this a 2-3-2 again, correct?
Yes.
So 2-3-2. Mm-hmm. So you got to win on the road somehow, some way.
Somehow,
you got to steal one versus Clayton Kershaw. How are you going to get it done? What are you going to do? Because it's Keuchel and Kershaw going on game one. That's the hardest thing is that who's able to win on the road? Right now, the best road team in baseball has been the Dodgers.
Can we call takebacks? The American League won the All-Star game. Can we have the All-Star game mean home field advantage again? I think.
Nope.
Bud Selig, I think that is anyway. A great rule now.
I see what you do. You're being biased.
Well, yeah. No, it is. They went by best record this year. And so they do have to win on the road at some point. And that's the tough thing is that you're not going to win in the first two. So you're going to have to win the three at home because you've got Clayton Kershaw, Rich Hill.
You don't think that out of your two guys, Verlander pitching in game two, you don't feel that you can get that game in LA?
Not if Clayton Kershaw has had some postseason demons. But
Kershaw's going against Keuchel. We're talking game two.
You're gonna have to get that one. Rich Hill, Verlander. Yeah, you have a shot. But here's the thing that is
you got a shot. You got a better shot.
You think starting pitching advantage Dodgers?
No, I think game two. I think game one, I don't think you're gonna be able to beat Clayton Kershaw, but I think game two, absolutely, you have more than just a shot. You probably should be a favorite in that game with Verlander because nobody's been able to hit him.
No, but at the same time, their staff, their offense is really good. This is going to be a dynamite series. I mean, starting pitching, and then here the issue that you have after that is that you have Yu Darvish is their number three starter, mm-hmm. and then Alex Wood who is an all-star, is their fourth starter.
Yeah, they got good pitching.
Alex Wood didn't look great, but they've got phenomenal starting pitching, and then they're complete offensively. And the Astros, the thing about Justin Verlander is, can Verlander be Madison Bumgarner? Can you ride him for 9 innings and hold on for dear life? I mean, you will be clinching when that bullpen comes in against this Dodgers lineup. Both of these offenses are lights out. They said they're still waiting and hoping that they can get Corey Seager back at some point. He is on the playoff roster, but... The Dodgers without him, that obviously helps a little bit with the Astros. But, I mean, look, if you're telling me what's my confidence level, look at how poorly the Astros hit the Yankees, for goodness sakes, mm-hmm. on the road. Now you have this pitching staff, this bullpen that they have to go up against.
I think it's a different atmosphere in L.A. I think it is. I think hitting in New York is completely different than handling it in L.A. It's going to be hot. You told me the heat's going to be over 100 degrees, which is nuts.
101 tomorrow.
That's nuts. It's going to be super hot in L.A.
What's up with that?
It's hot.
I mean, Los Angeles is like warm, but we're at the end of October and it's 101?
Global warming.
Fire season, man.
Mm. Fire season is
it's going to be windy, too. Those dry winds.
Well, hopefully the ball can... blow a lot of home runs right out of Dodger Stadium. My
Not
goodness.
For the Dodgers.
Yeah, and then, shifting winds, of course. Yeah. Spin it back in when they're up at the plate. But I'm in on this one. I was laughing because last segment you said, what are you chuckling at? I looked up and I saw Eduardo Perez was doing his little hit the board thing on who's got the advantage, offense, Houston, which I went, okay. Bullpen, Dodgers, manager, push, because who knows with Dave Robertson.
Yeah, they're both in, yeah.
And AJ Hinch. But then he did starting pitching Houston. And I went, I know Verlander's awesome. I know Keuchel's good.
Yeah, two's better than...
Charlie Morton and Lance McCullers.
Don't downplay this, Dusty. You have a better starting pitching rotation. Houston does.
Then Clayton Kershaw, Yu Darvish, Rich Hill, and Alex Wood.
Because your top two are so much better. They go hand in hand. You can
those two are good. They're really good.
I would.
Don't get me wrong.
Two is all you need. Look, for God's sakes, the Giants had one and they were able to win World Series. So come on. It just doesn't. If you need Verlander to go on a short rest, he can come in and shut it down. You just don't know. When you go back home, if you can steal one with him, he's pitching game five. Next thing you know, you're like, oh boy.
To say that the starting pitching as a whole is better, those two are good, but they can wash you out with other two. I mean, Verlander as your two, I like Verlander over Rich Hill, but three, you're going to need a third starter, and Yu Darvish being that third guy is pretty electric to have. And Clayton Kershaw is your number one when he's rolling.
Tell me,
I hope.
All right.
That Kershaw comes back.
That's how we feeling. Don't give me the good. Don't poo-poo this.
I feel good.
No excuses. I don't think.
And here's the thing: is that when people are sitting there, they're going, "Oh, the Dodgers are going to roll." No, this series is going to be back and forth. This is going to be nip and tuck. I do think that we may have an element of what happened in the ALCS where teams hold serve on their home fields, and then can the Astros get that momentum and seize it back in Game 6 and 7 in LA?
Okay, first team to win on the road wins the series.
Maybe. I mean, the Dodgers don't have to win on the road. They can just win at home. I think if this thing goes seven, I don't know if we have a team win on
the road. All I'm saying is if Houston can win in L.A., take one of the two,
I think they win the series. If they win game two, I think I feel very good about this series. And the biggest thing is that Josh Reddick came out of his slump. And he actually got some hits in game 6 and 7. Jose Altuve, if you don't think that guy's the MVP this year, you can take a hike. That guy came up in the biggest spots on the biggest stage when he needed to in the ALCS.
You're biased, but I don't disagree with you. I mean, it's going to be tough because he might not get the fan. He might not get – they might
fans
give it.
Don't vote on it.
Hold on.
Baseball people should see it.
Baseball people are fans, Dusty. Yeah. In the end, they're not baseball guys. They're writers, but they're fans.
Baseball writers.
Yeah, come on.
Here's my biggest thing. Is that, you know, the last 8 World Series, the team whose league championship series ended last won the World Series?
No.
So the Astros going game 7 advantaged them. So when your league championships goes longer, the World Series champion.
I saw that.
There you go. And for those asking.
Boom goes the dynamite.
This texture, like I said, 5 games is over. Come on, son. This is going to be a good series.
5 games who?
Come
he didn't
on,
say
son.
Who.
He's Dodgers. He said it earlier. Oh. He said it. He's trying to get him.
I don't mind haters.
But if the Astros bats are alive, I hope that the warm Los Angeles air sparks the Astros bats a little bit more than that cold New York. You know? I'm grasping at straws for why this offense is going to be better than it was against the Yankees.
Digging.
Against better pitching.
You need Springer to wake up.
Yeah. Yeah. This text says, how's the DH going to be impacted in the World Series? Not much for Houston. No, because they'll either put...
You have a better DH with Evan Gattis, I believe, though.
Yeah, but he can catch.
Yeah.
He's not just... Yeah. He and Brian McCann have both caught, thrown in the DH. You can throw...
He hit 6, correct?
What?
He's hitting 6. Gattis hitting 6.
6 or 7, yeah. They'll. But yeah. Then you can also have, if you want to throw Beltran in there... you can throw him at first if Gurriel's slumping, or you can throw him in right.
Who is the better hitting team for the pitchers? That might be the better thing. Interesting, right? Who's the better bunting team for the pitchers?
Nobody. Nobody wins when the pitchers have to hit.
Don't watch Yu Darvish hit. It's really bad.
He drew a walk.
He was on the plate. I thought he was going to get hit in the face.
He drew a walk.
I knew nice he drew a walk. It was embarrassing.
Wear one.
Frightening.
The texture had asked, when's the last World Series to have two teams each win 100 games in the regular season? That would be 1970. Orioles and the Reds. 1970.
And that was the Big Red Machine, correct? Joe Morgan, Pete Rose.
Pete Rose. Pretty good teams.
Yeah. Johnny Bench.
So this is going to be a fun one, man. And I'm going on Friday. I'll be at game 3. Woo! So I'm leaving you on Friday's show. I'm going to be down in Houston. I'm going to be living it up deep in the heart of Texas.
I want a Jose Altuve bobblehead.
Okay.
That's one of my request.
Bobblehead. That's an odd request.
I want to be something unique.
Okay.
I think, but we'll keep it on your desk.
We'll keep it at my desk. You just want to see it.
I just want to see it.
From a distance.
Yeah.
All right. Monday Night Football's got first place on the line, baby. Dustin came on the fan.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
See Martavis Bryant called out Juju Smith-Schuster on Instagram yesterday. Steelers receivers calling each other out.
Yeah.
He says he's back on to wanting a trade. No.
He's Martavis disgruntled. Bryant. He's a disgruntled player. He's causing a problem. And what else do you do? I mean, I think he's only making, what, $750,000?
Who? Who? Martavis?
Yeah. I think he's very low paid when it talks to pecking order. So maybe it's just like, fine.
Wow.
Get him out of here.
Somebody named Team Votto on Instagram said Juju's better. Martavis Bryant responded is, Juju's nowhere near better than me, fool. All they need to do is give me what I want, and y'all can have Juju and whoever else. So he wants a trade. Seems like things are going well in Pittsburgh right now. Even after they get back on the winning track, they were impressive against the Bungles. Bungles seem to be bungling again.
Yeah.
But, man, when you have a guy that bad in your locker room, don't you just do whatever it takes to just get him out of there?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think the Steelers like dealing with any of that. I don't think the Rooney family is enjoying just the amount of, I want to say, off-the-field issues that the team has had. It's really been focusing on individuals, not only from Ben Roethlisberger saying that I'm ready to retire, I don't have it anymore, Antonio Brown looking at every player, Le'Veon Bell holding out. It's just been a lot of turmoil. But guess what? They're leading the division yet again.
Yeah. Also of note today, Texans left tackle Dwayne Brown has officially reported back to Texans training camp. That's a big one for Houston.
Well, it also means because he did it before week 8.
Well, that's a big one for his money. His money. Pocketbook.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with the Texans.
No.
But the Texans at 3-3, they're right in the thick of it with Tennessee and Jacksonville only a game up in the win column at 4-3. They have a shot at this NFC South or AFC South title. And by golly, I think that's the most wide open division in football right now.
I like that division. It's the most interesting division I've seen in
football.
The Colts
are god awful. Mm-hmm. But then you have Tennessee, Jacksonville, and Houston, who it's not just bad football there anymore. Yeah. Those are good teams.
And you're going to see Houston coming to town here in against the Seahawks not too recent future. Mm. Should be a good game.
This week, isn't it?
I think it is this week, if I'm correct. You get to see a little Deshaun Watson up close and personal if you're going to the game.
Are you going
to
go?
No, I can't afford tickets. Kidding me? You see what it costs to go to a Seahawks game?
Put on a uniform and sneak in. Just walk in like a player.
You never know.
Wear a suit and then just kind of shuffle in off the team bus.
That makes me think of something. I'm going to read something real quick before we go because we got a couple minutes. But I wanted to read this. This came in from a Cougar fan. And when I talk about tickets, I said, we talked earlier about the Pac-12 and falling behind or whatever and just in not being able to make college football playoff. Do we think that this is a problem? I personally, this is a quote here. I personally would love to take my family to every Wazoo football game, but because of the inflated prices to pay for facilities and coaches, plus the late night starts, doesn't allow me to enjoy the opportunity. Unfortunately, I can barely even justify making it for one game, and I feel like my kids are losing out on not getting the same opportunities to see college football that I had growing up. Are tickets in the in-game experience us? Are we doing something differently out here in the Pac-12? No. Are we outpricing everybody? Or are just we just spend our money differently than everybody else does?
No, we're not.
So no and no?
Expensive. No, it's hard to get in the door anywhere. Also, one thing that the Pac-12 does have that's different than in the South or Midwest is how far it is away from each team.
So far.
It's proximity. Far to travel. And then, like, say you graduate from UW, you get a job down in San Francisco.
Yeah.
You're not going to a game, you know? I mean, even if you get a job in Spokane, that's a four-hour drive,
Washington
isn't it?
Doesn't have a leg to stand on with that one because they're in Seattle. There's plenty of people. But I get it for Cougar fans. I get it for Oregon fans and Oregon State fans. You don't have any leg to stand on in L.A. either. You just are whiny. You don't care about it down there.
No, LA people just don't.
They don't care. But yeah, I agree with that Cougar point. That's tough to get out there, and you're right, it's expensive.
Yeah. But it's nowhere, it's not different anywhere else, tell you that much. Except for at some of those 100,000 seat stadiums, you can get into a Tennessee game relatively cheap because you're a mile and a half away.
Can you believe that?
All right, coming up next on The Herd with Colin Cowherd, Peter King will be on Monday Morning Quarterback at 10 o'clock. Michael Vick, Fox NFL analyst, will join the show at some point as well. After The Herd, it is Dirt and Sprague, noon to 3, 3 to 7, primetime with Isaac and Sue. We will see you tomorrow from 6 to 9 a.m. This has been Dusty and Cam on 1080 The Fan.
Please clap. What an exciting time. Go Owls.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.